It's Extension 720 with Milt Rosenberg from the Allstate Studios in Chicago on 720 WGN.
And so, as I was saying a bit earlier, our plans have changed. They have changed because of a technological failure. What the ultimate source of that failure is, I don't know. But our guest from Boston is not with us. I trust we might be able to do that program with Stephen Prothero at a later date. But that does give us an opportunity to zero in on some of the main things in the news. And we'll zero in to begin with on the main story in Chicago at this very moment. I might ask before I read the story, and I've got full coverage in a story put up by ABC, but I might add by way of a simple question, did you enjoy the weekend? And are you looking forward to the weekend next coming? Or maybe you've got to take into account that it's not totally safe out there. Indeed, depending upon where you live in the city, it's quite unsafe. But that refers not only to to Lawndale or to areas of the South Side. It refers increasingly to downtown Chicago, to the Loop, and to Michigan Avenue and State Street in the Entertainment District. Here is a story summarizing what's happened this weekend. I now proceed to read, though we look forward to your phone call input, and you can get in there right at this moment, if you have something to say about the absolute epidemic of violence in Chicago that we have experienced over recent weekends. And if you want to wait, if you don't mind waiting just a bit, get in there with your commentary at 312-591-7200, because I'll be turning to the calls right after I read this particular account. Here it goes. 11 people died and 43 others were shot over the Memorial Day weekend in Chicago. And through Sunday, homicides in the city increased almost 50% over the same period as last year. Those gruesome numbers prompted Mayor Rahm Emanuel and Police Superintendent Gary McCarthy to outline a strategy today to reduce violence in the nation's third largest city. Yes, you do hear me trying to control a bit of a cynical laugh at this moment. We've heard of many such plans in the past. Going back to the story as written, the plan features enhanced technology designed to provide better real-time intelligence about gang activity, more efforts to rid communities of what the mayor calls the cancer of liquor stores, where much of the violence occurs, and taking away the guns that are the instruments of that violence. We are going to get the job done by intercepting the firearms, intervening in the gangs, and taking down the narcotics markets and holding on to them, McCarthy said at a news conference today. Editorial comment from me, good luck. I think I've heard that before, too. Continuing with the story, though innocent bystanders were among those shot over the weekend, including a 7-year-old girl, the mayor stressed that retaliatory attacks were at the center of much of the violence, noting that, quote, 70% to 80% of the increase in shootings and homicides are gang-on-gang violence. McCarthy added, it's not just about solving this crime, it's about preventing the next one. Yes, Chief, it is indeed. Continuing again, the superintendent cited a new gang audit and mapping system to be employed by police that will provide real-time information to officers on the street. Quote, so the second something happens, whether it's a fight in a school or a shooting on the street, we have the ability to predict where the retaliation will take place, end quote. He also said that monitoring social media would be an important component of the strategy because the gangs go back and forth on Facebook and Twitter and call each other out. So there's a new utility for the social media. They help the gangs kill, but also it might help the police to track the intra gang messages. And back to this account given by ABC. McCarthy said Chicago's crime patterns are complicated. It's a different dynamic depending on the neighborhood. On the west side, much of it is about drugs. On the south side, it's about turf. And on the Latin front, it's about affronts to each other's gangs, he said. Emanuel emphasized New City efforts to shutter or restrict the hours of certain neighborhood liquor stores, which he called a cancer on the community. They are a magnet for gun violence, narcotic dealing, and other criminal activity. Still quoting the mayor. One city official who presides over an area affected, interestingly here, affected is spelled wrong. It's affected. It's spelled with an E. It should be with an A. But I won't complain at this moment. More important matters are at issue. Back to the text. One city official who presides over an area affected by the upturn in shootings greeted the plan announced today with skepticism. Alderman Carrie Austin told ABC's Chicago affiliate WLS, "We've all heard this before. We've heard it in different ways. Let's see what this spin will do." And while the mayor stressed that ending gang violence must be a community effort as much as a police effort, he seemed to acknowledge the difficulty of getting broad involvement with a problem so concentrated in the poorer parts of the city. "You cannot find comfort because it was not in my block," he said. "It happened in your city, and when a child is hit or is a victim of gun violence, that is a tear in the fabric of our city." Yes, you can't find comfort that it happens in other parts of the city, but increasingly, for those who are not directly involved in gang life, it's beginning to happen in our parts of the city as well. There have been assaults, gang assaults, usually by teenagers from the inner city, usually black or Latino, and they have been assaults upon passers-by in the Loop, on Michigan Avenue, and yesterday on State Street, where three people were injured and sent to the hospital by a gang of kids, some seven or eight, one of whom has been apprehended, and the oldest one was 18 years old. The youngest was, I believe, 13. Well, that's what we face right now in Chicago. The mayor got a lot of plaudits. And so did, of course, the police chief, for how effectively the NATO weekend was handled. And the police chief particularly has been honored by many, the city council and many others, and complimented in special ceremonies for the wonderful way that he handled the protesters, the Occupy protesters. Well, the Occupy protesters weren't out to kill. Others seem to be out to kill and to do whatever savagery they can as they steal and attack and get their kicks for one way or another through such rapacious, savage activity. And it is reaching into all the rest of the city. And that is all the more reason why the police chief will be paying more attention to it. Because the terrible fact is, my judgment, I can't prove this, that in the police culture, if it's all just in the ghetto, sure, they try to investigate a little, but the feeling is, well, that's what happens in the ghetto, but so long as we can contain it there, that's our job, and we don't have to worry too much about pursuing every last murder suspect, because we'll never find them anyway. I wish that were not the attitude, but I think it is. And I wish that people would raise the basic question of what's wrong in that culture so as to generate this kind of violence, this kind of madness from the adolescents who live there. That needs direct and honest address in this city and elsewhere in the country, but we don't usually get it. I see that we're a little bit late already for commercials. I've had my say. I've had my full say. I very much want to hear from you. I see some callers waiting. There's room for others. If you want to be heard, get in there instantly at 312-591-7200, because right after some coming commercials, we'll go to the phones, and I'd just as soon have a community forum on this whole difficult and very, very troubling question. 312-591-7200. The lines are open. We await your calls. We'll be on to the calls after this.
Extension 720 with Milt Rosenberg on 720 WGN.
And we'll go to a full sort of community forum on this very, very serious problem in Chicago. It's not a new one. It's been there for a long time. It looks like it's getting worse this summer. And no one really addresses, I think, the way they should, the question of what motivates these kids, what goes wrong in their lives to turn them into these marauding gangs. But I am eager to hear what you've got to say about all of these matters, including, of course, the question of what kind of immediate crime control should be attempted by the police department and by other institutional agencies. 312-591-7200. The air is yours. Sam is first. Hello, you're on the air.
How are you, Milt?
Just fine, sir. Go ahead.
I want to ask you this question and see if you know the answer. If you murder somebody in the state of Illinois right now with a firearm, what do you think the minimum sentence is?
The minimum sentence?
Minimum sentence, the absolute minimum sentence that you would receive in the state of Illinois.
Well, if it's first-degree murder?
It's first-degree murder, any of these murders that occurred over the weekend.
Yeah. I don't know. Tell me. I truly don't
45
know.
Years.
45
now,
years.
Now, 45 years, and it's no longer half. It's 100%.
Mm-hmm.
So that means a kid who is 18 years old, who commits a murder with a firearm, will get 45 at the very minimum, and they may not get the very minimum.
Yeah.
They may get 50 years. And I think that's the solution to this stuff. And people may think that I'm naive, that everybody says the criminals know the system better than anybody. I believe that many of these kids have no idea what's in store for them. What do you think the minimum right now? Right now in Illinois, there are some extraordinarily harsh laws, and we don't need any more laws. What do you think the minimum right now for an armed robbery with a firearm is?
You have good information on all of this. I'm just going to
21 years right now. So when some kid commits an armed robbery with a firearm, and he's told you're looking at a minimum of 21 years, that's probably the first time that he's realizing what's in store for him. So some of these kids, 20-year-old kids, who commit these murders are now looking at 45, 50 years.
How long have these sentencing requirements been in the law?
They've been around for a little bit. They're making them harsher and harsher. So this is what I'm proposing.
Yeah.
And I've really thought about this, that I think the solution is, and it may seem naive, I do know a little bit, that I propose that Superintendent McCarthy create the list. And the list is a simple leaflet, a flyer, that every tactical officer calls a kid over when he's stopping him. He gives him the list. And the list is in very rudimentary level English that explains that if you commit a murder with a firearm, you're not your mother. It doesn't say all what I'm saying, but it says that if you're 18, you're looking at getting out when you're 63.
Well, that's
and
a good idea.
Every girlfriend you have will be dead. May not even be alive. Your mother will be gone.
I got it, sir. You said it well, and that is a very interesting contribution. And
it's not a bad idea.
The leaflet is not a bad idea.
And I think full information is what the solution. Not more laws.
All right.
There's enough harsh laws already. It may sound naive. You may get lots of cops that say that I don't know what I'm talking about. But I actually. And am on the other side dealing with people
Are you a cop?
No, I'm not a cop.
What
I deal with people who I represent people.
You're a lawyer.
And I'm telling you that when it's explained, it's the first time that somebody is understanding what's in store for them. And I think I don't care what anybody thinks, there is still a self-preservation.
You've got you've got an interesting point of view. You've expressed it very well. Indeed,
you must be
a good lawyer.
It's leaflets. It's called the list.
The list,
a
the leaflets.
Simple list.
But you've got to stop talking now so I can go to another call. Thank you
Bye.
Very much. That is interesting indeed. But the man has the strength of his conviction, which also tends to make him logorrheic. You can look that word up. 312-591-7200. Judy is next. Hello, you're on the air.
Hi.
Yes.
I do kind of agree with the previous caller, who was very passionate, but, you know, that these kids don't understand what they're doing. But I think this new law that they passed that is targeting the leaders of the gangs could make a difference, because you have all these young men who think that, or young men and women, I'm probably sure, who think that, you know, this is their ticket out. If they can if they can do what their leaders, in quotation marks, are telling them to do, then they're going to get out.
But you're right, you're assuming all of this is gang.
It is.
Well, it isn't. It isn't all. That's just the point.
Hold
on a minute. Hold on a minute. Listen.
Okay.
Listen for a minute.
Yes, I will.
There's a new element here. It didn't just appear for the first time this weekend. It's been developing. You get kids very young who essentially are just going out as disorganized gangs. They're rushing into stores to grab whatever they can and to frighten people. And they're hitting on people late at night walking the streets.
Right.
The guys who were attacked at 500th State Street last night were attacked by kids ranging...
A bunch of kids.
Seven kids ranging in ages from 13 to 16.
Right.
This is not organized gang activity.
No.
This is random, expressive gang activity, just improvised for fun.
But, Milt?
Yes.
Maybe they want to be part of that gang.
May well be. The gang culture...
Do you understand? Like they're going to earn their way in.
Okay. The gang culture is certainly there, and it's certainly evil in terms of all of its social consequences.
I really think that this new law really may help.
I hope so.
Because, you go after the big guys, and then they're not going to be happy.
It's a good point. It may very well help.
If one of their guys gets nailed for doing something, and then it goes back to them... This is not going to be pretty for them.
I thank you for the call.
I think you're quite right.
I think you're right.
I really hope.
It may help. You're right. It may help. Just as Jewish grandmothers tell you that of chicken soup, it couldn't hurt if you've got a cold. It may indeed help. But these are all ways of trying to discourage criminal activity rather than going to the roots of the criminal activity. The culture that generates this sort of desperation, that generates this sort of anger, generates this sort of ignorance of the very nature of the law, the very nature of the surrounding social institutions, that also needs to be examined and analyzed and addressed. But crime should always be punished and should be pursued, of course, and that may have dissuasive effects upon the possibility of further crime. We're going to pause right now for the... For an update on the news, in fact, and then directly back. I think we may be staying with this topic for the evening because it's generating strong activity on the phones. And indeed, it's a matter of intense and significant concern in Chicago this very night. So back to your calls and emails. We'll open up the email as well. The email address, extension 720 at WGNradio.com. And get those emails in as well as those calls. We'll be with you right after another update on the evening's news from, I'm not sure who tonight, but we'll find out.
Extension 720 with Milt Rosenberg on 720 WGN.
And with good thanks to our fine colleague Paula Cooper for that report. Back to the phones. After I say that I think this is our topic for the evening, obviously. It's very important that people have strong reactions to it. I do hope that we get some calls, not really from concerned citizens, but from people in the justice system. And for that matter, from those who live close to the gang culture and think that they have things to tell us about what goes wrong and why all of this has continued to happen after years and years and years of children being killed in the inner city, killed by stray bullets. 312-591-7200. Next up is Kurt. Good evening. You're on the air.
Yes, Mr. Rosenberg. I'm calling because this obviously it hit the fan this weekend, but this occurred last year. It occurred at the Wisconsin State Fair where people, black youths gathered, young black youths gathered, and started attacking white people. Whites were intentionally targeted and pulled out of cars.
Yeah, I remember that one. It was about a year ago, yes.
Yeah, they were leaving the Wisconsin State Fair. The next day, I believe the governor brought in more state troopers and more police to watch that it didn't occur a second day. Same thing happened at the Iowa State Fair last year as well. And in Philadelphia, the same thing was occurring, where young black youths were attacking white people intentionally.
What do you make of it all?
I believe that it is some kind of an undeclared race war, that that's going on, because basically I know here in Cook County where we are that these young thugs, they laugh at getting a court case. They call it catching a case. That they use it as like a term of derision, because they know that basically the law is a toothless tiger, unlike what the lawyer was saying, where people were getting 45 years and 21 years for first-degree murder and armed robbery. There was the case of Christine Eilman. I don't know if you remember that one, where the young lady from California who was acting strange at Midway Airport, she got cut loose by the police in the Inglewood neighborhood, and then she was lured into the Robert Taylor homes, where she was a white female, where she was later raped and then pushed out of a seventh-floor window. Well, that only happened like about 7 years ago, and the perpetrator's already out of prison.
Mm-hmm.
And her family's suing the city because they should have never let her out in that area. And her case still hasn't even been heard yet. So they know, look, they can do something like that, and the guy is already out of prison. And that you got attempted murder, and you got kidnapping and rape and sexual assault. So they laugh. So if they punch somebody down on Michigan Avenue or in front of the Chicago Theater or something like that, they know at very least they're gonna get maybe a simple assault charge. The judge is going to say, I got no room to put you in jail or prison, and they're going to get cut loose. The law has no teeth. But I think these attacks are occurring because, like I said, this youth that's coming up, this millennial youth that's been raised in inner cities, whether it's in a barrio or in a black ghetto, have some like hostility that I think it's been fanned by popular culture, be it MTV or the what they listen to on the radio or what they read or what their activists in their neighborhood tell them. But I believe that there is an undeclared war on white people in urban areas and in any areas that whites congregate in, and black youths feel that they can manipulate the situation.
Well, the war instinct and the war intention, if it's there at all, is surely not shared by all members of a given black community, not by most of them. But obviously with some adolescent kids, usually without fathers and with very often incompetent mothers who had them when they, the mothers themselves, were 16 or 17 years old.
Absolutely.
You've got essentially a pathological population.
And you have a 70% illegitimacy rate.
Oh, yes.
And, I heard a black comedian one time say that black babies were magical because they make their fathers disappear.
Yes.
And it was an African-American comedian who said it. And it was meant to be funny, but
well, there's
the
a lot
time,
of realism.
Poignant.
There's a lot of realism about that aspect of ghetto culture from not only from black comedians, but from black social workers, from black police, from black sociologists, for that matter.
Absolutely. I mean, look at the way that they dress, the baggy pants and everything. That
yeah.
That's like mimic prison behavior.
Yeah,
I mean,
you have very intense feelings on it, and undoubtedly you've said some things there that are pertinent, and I do thank you for the call. But we need to keep our intensity down to a moderate level tonight as we try to make some sense out of this terrible, aching, persisting, continuing problem in American urban life. It is not merely a Chicago problem, though it's as bad in Chicago, I think, as it has been for a long time. 312-591-7200. And of course, it's bad for particularly those minority groups some of whose kids go into this kind of raging rampage and or go the full distance to murder, because, yes, some of them will get arrested. Some of them will get essentially lifelong imprisonment. And there's much, much suffering in those communities because of this behavior from those kids. 312-591-7200. Dan is our next caller. Good evening, sir.
Yes, Milt, thank you for taking my call. I work within the juvenile justice system.
Uh-huh.
And repeatedly hear from these youth that they don't expect to live past 25 years of age. They feel that they have their only chance is to get involved with the gang culture, and the anger that's there is very much part of what you described as ineffective parenting by moms that are working or have addiction problems or other issues, financial problems that they are barely managing, or being raised by grandparents or aunts and uncles that are elderly and can't really stay on these kids and really provide the structure that's needed. Many of them don't have anything to go home to, and they will often be told that they're used to hearing consequences that never materialize. And I think they believe that within the court system. They spend many times at what used to be called the Audi home, the county juvenile detention system, with many, many, many times in that system until they actually are incarcerated in the juvenile justice system run by the state. And the amount of time that many of these children do is very, very minimal for some very, very serious crimes.
What kind of role do you fill in the justice system?
I'm a clinical psychologist and do direct therapy with these youth on a day-to-day basis.
Well, you know I'm a psychologist, so not a clinical one. What kind of response do you get? Do you get any real therapeutic success?
Yes, sir. There are many kids that respond and recognize that someone is trying to help them. But many times this is after numerous times being confined in the facility. They oftentimes are looking to get to the facility I work within is a medium security. Many of these kids see it as a honor or an achievement to get to maximum security. It's oftentimes where their gang leaders are at.
Oh, my.
They feel that getting that kind of recognition will help them in moving up in their gang. And, yes, not all of them are gang involved.
But did I hear you say, as you began to talk a few minutes ago, that most of them feel they won't be alive beyond 25?
That's correct. That is the golden age that most of them will tell you. They don't believe that they're going to live beyond that level. They don't believe that
and
when there's
you,
any way.
You must then say to a kid who tells you that, then why do you go on with this way of life? Why don't you get away from it? How do they respond when you say that?
They respond that there really isn't any alternative, that this is the way that they don't like school. They don't believe that school is really going to give them anything that they truly need or that's going to potentially change their life. And they don't believe they're going to go back to anything different than what they left. And I had a youth conversation with a youth just the other day, and I've had this many times, where they have identified some of their peers actually do not have anything to go back to, and therefore they just as soon stay in the system. The facilities that they're in are not bad places. They get more consideration. They get more. The youth need structure, as you well know, and they're really looking for that within the system.
Yeah.
But it's appalling to see how little time some of them do. And you should be aware that juvenile life is, in fact, until a youth reaches the age of 20, when at which that point needs to be given the opportunity to be paroled. And at that point, you know, would end their parole at 21 years of age. So the time that the gentleman earlier was talking about, for the most part, is not going to apply to these kids.
You mean the severe sentence of 45 years or more?
Yes, and that's very often the cases are pleaded down because of the clogging of the court systems.
And down to second degree or even to manslaughter and so on.
That's correct. Yeah. That's correct. And sometimes even below that. It is quite appalling. It is quite upsetting. And one looks at that and says, you know, are we really setting this person up to go out to reoffend and to end up in the adult correctional system, which I've spent a number of years in that system as well. And it is, I think, hitting the adults in a different way, but usually after their third or fourth incarceration.
Listen, I've got to stop in just a moment for some commercials, but I must ask you, though I have to ask you to do it within the space of a minute, what would you recommend as a step towards a real solution, understanding that no single step is going to solve it. But what action might be taken through law, through social organizations, through education, through whatever, that might really make a difference?
A strict parole system in which the youth are given the opportunity to connect with social service agencies. I've had youth tell me that they are told that it's okay to smoke marijuana while they're on parole. It's almost a given. And these youth regard marijuana as absolutely a mainstay of their day-to-day life, and that they start at a very young age. I've had youth tell me that they started smoking marijuana and involved in the gangs when they're 9 years of age.
Sarah, I thank you very much. It's been an excellent contribution. I fear I'm overdue for some commercials, but thank you for a very important contribution to the program.
Thank you.
And good night for now. We'll be directly back after these words.
Extension 720 with Milt Rosenberg on 720 WGN.
The scheduled program for tonight had to be abandoned because something went wrong with the ISDN system that we were going to use, talking to a guest based in Boston. But that gave us an opportunity to turn to something which indeed is very pressing and very important in the city this very night, namely the weekend splurges in murder and mayhem, and the fact that it looks like in some ways it's out of control and it's leaking out from the inner city areas onto the main business district. And that is at last energizing and arousing the citizenry of Chicago, which should have been aroused all along. The point is, that isn't why we should be concerned. We should be concerned about all the black kids who are getting killed and all the Latino kids who are getting killed and who are killing one another. And if they then form up in gangs and begin marauding down Michigan Avenue or on State Street in the entertainment district, that calls it to our attention, to be sure. 312-591-7200. Next up is Johnson. You're on the air. Good evening.
Yeah, hi, Milt. You know, I don't discount anything that the previous callers have said, but after living in a couple of states and big cities where concealed carry is allowed, I know from talking to some cops here in Chicago who privately have said they wish that that was allowed in Chicago or in the state of Illinois, for that matter. Illinois is the only state in the union that still does not allow citizens to have concealed carry, go through the proper training.
There's one other area. It's not a state. It's Washington, D.C., which also doesn't allow it.
Right. And, you know, the first order for any government is to protect its citizens, regardless of skin color.
Or to let them protect themselves, is what you're saying.
Well, you know, the fact is that those cities that have concealed carry and citizens are allowed to train and go through the proper training and credentials, et cetera, that this doesn't happen in the magnitude that it's happened in Chicago in the last 3 years. You know, the mayor and the police chief had plenty of foot soldiers, police on foot, on bicycles for NATO, but can they protect Michigan Avenue? You walk around, you see, I don't see them. I don't know, I think McCarthy came from New York, I believe, right?
Well, I think he came from Newark.
Or Newark. Well, you go out east, especially New York, and the success they've had, they do things differently. They believe in a strong police presence. It's not overpowering.
These guys do, too. You will see on Michigan Avenue, on the median strip, you'll see police cars parked there as a clear message to all who are walking along Michigan Avenue or rampaging along Michigan Avenue that we, the cops, are here. I predict you'll see that on in the entertainment district of State Street tomorrow. Maybe it's there this very night.
That's
a response, but it's not the ultimately effective response, obviously.
Right, but they don't do it. They don't do it the way that they've done it in New York, where they've had success. And two cops in a car can't beat four cops walking that block and elsewhere. I mean, they had it for NATO. I understand why, but why they can't do it here in Chicago?
Well, they can. I think
I don't know.
They sometimes do. I've seen cops after one particularly bad weekend where there was a lot of trouble on Michigan Avenue in the shopping district. One did see cops on a number of street corners, very often in pairs, as well as the cars parked on the median strip. They were there in force and making their presence very clear, and it may have had some dampening effect on the amount of enraged crazy behavior that occurred over those days. But it's no final answer, obviously.
And it is reactive. It happens after the fact.
To be sure.
I don't know. Those cities that I've lived in where citizens are allowed to have concealed carry, these acts don't happen or they happen.
Yeah.
Their rate is much lower.
Well, I think you're right. I'm basically persuaded that concealed carry makes a good deal of sense. John Lott, L-O-T-T, has done a lot of research on that and published it over the years. He's been a guest on this program on occasion, as he is visible on many television programs these days. And I think he's made the case very effectively. And I thank you for making the case tonight. And with that, we'll go to the next caller. That next caller is Don, and you are on the air, sir. Good evening.
Hello, Professor. I'd like to tell you it's a pleasure, and this is my favorite show in the whole wide world.
Well, thank you very much.
I don't know if your producer showed you. I'm on the John Williams Show every once in a while, and I have a website that I showed your producer, and it's basically a map of carry laws.
Oh, really?
And, mm-hmm. Yes. I used to do a lot of research about this, and I still am involved a bit in activism with concealed carry.
Well, give the website address.
It is gunmap.org.
Gunmap.
GUNMAP.org.
Okay, yep. Very good. So what else do you want to say?
I wanted to say that, I think it was the Illinois Supreme Court last week. Heard arguments regarding our case for concealed carry. Unfortunately, there's a lot of social dynamics that go with carrying guns in the United States. A lot of it has racial implications. A lot of it has political leaning implications due to the economic downturn and, a lot of other factors. I feel that what you're talking about tonight is very important. Concealed carry is not the answer to everything. It's just one bit of, it's just one bit in the direction of some help. I think the point you're making tonight is a very good one, that we need to talk about these things. We need to talk about these things in more open and honest discussions, politely, but we don't need to be politically correct either all the time.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a hamper on our society. I think it's a disservice to people. I think it's very, very, it's very, very disheartening when you talk to people politically correctly, not you, but I'm just saying the general, attitude of the media at large. It's, it's just dishonest and it doesn't help to serve anybody. But I wanted to share with you my research, and somebody brought up that topic, so I thought I would call in. And I listen to you every single night.
Well, thank you very much, and I appreciate your contribution. We will be going to the newsroom in just a moment for an update from Paula Cooper, but I will repeat the regular invitation. Of course, give us a call if you want to join in this conversation. One line is available at this moment, the number 312-591-7200. Now it's not available, I see, but lines become available as we say goodnight to prior callers. So if you are attentive to what's available, you can zoom in there and possibly get through on your first or second try at 312-591-7200. And, of course, you can email us as well, wherever you are, whether you're listening over the Internet far away or whether you're in town right here. If you want to come in via the email address extension 720 at wgnradio.com. And now to the WGN Newsroom and Paula Cooper.
Extension 720 with Milt Rosenberg on 720 WGN.
Because of a change in schedule, we got the opportunity to go open line tonight, and just the right time to do that because much of Chicago was very focused on the terrible news as to how murderous this last weekend has been in Chicago. A murder in the inner city and gang assaults on passersby in downtown Chicago, reaching a higher and higher level, which requires immediate response, but beyond that requires serious consideration of what kind of culture has developed and has functioned for so long in the inner city to produce kids who will commit crimes of this sort and do it often almost with joyful abandon and with little concern for their own welfare, obviously, let alone the welfare of others whom they attack. 312-591-7200 as we go back to the phones, and Dan is next. Good evening, you're on the air.
Hi, Milt.
Yes, sir.
I'm a retired psychologist, and also have a fellowship in sex offender treatment. And I, you know, see this more kind of from a psychoanalytic point of view, in that going back to a comment you made earlier, that a lot of these kids are products of psychopathic parents.
Well, inadequate parents, at least. Usually just a mother without a father, and overworked, overloaded, sometimes on drugs. And in general, there's considerable parental incompetence, undoubtedly.
Well, correct. But the end result of that is a lack of a conscience formation.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And if you know well that if an individual doesn't have a conscience, they're fearless and they're free to do what they want to do.
But, you know, there's the great mystery of individual differences. Out of those same deprived circumstances, with broken families, with illegitimate births, with addicted mothers, what have you, you will get kids emerging who've got conscience, who've got ambition, who get out of that life and go on even into college and career. It's never fully predictable, is it?
Well, no, it's not. But my only disagreement with what you just said,
yeah,
would be that represents a very small minority.
To be sure.
Okay. And then when you move these kids to the prison system, you have to realize a prison system is based on rehabilitation. And, you know, essentially the definition of rehabilitation is to restore something or regain something that was once there. And they should be focused, especially with these kids, on more of habilitation, trying to provide them with something that was never there.
How do you do that?
Well, and that's the issue,
yeah,
is if you don't get the early experiences to develop a conscience, that allows your conscience to tell you right from wrong, it's very difficult to instill a conscience in individuals after they've got into their early teens. It's a very difficult thing to do. And, you know, most of the treatments that are used are cognitive behavioral types of treatments. And, you know, that's what's primarily used with sex offenders. And so it's kind of giving them an artificial conscience, in the sense that it's not embedded in their psyche, but through the cognitive behavioral kinds of treatments, you're able to provide management skills.
I'll make a point as one psychologist to another. The peripheral approach to change, even to attitude change, and to even character change, is too often neglected. But in fact, we know, for example, from the research on cognitive dissonance, so-called, that if you can get people to behave in a way that is presently inauthentic for them, but to behave almost counterattitudinally, the more they behave that way, the more they tend to internalize the behavior, and it becomes part of their actual ego repertoire. You can take somebody who's engaging criminal behavior and get him to behave well for a year or two and give him some rewards, but not too much reward, so that he will then classify it as a behavior coming from himself rather than just in response to excessive rewards leading him on. And the outcome, the consequence, sometimes is basic interchange in motivational pattern. It's something which social psychology has elaborated in recent years, but which the rest of the world hasn't learned to really fully appreciate or apply. I thank you, sir, for the call. An interesting one indeed. And we go quickly to the next. The next being Judy. You are on the air. Good evening.
Hi, Mel.
Yes, ma'am.
I'm a bachelor of social work, and I'm also a substance abuse counselor. And I've noticed over the years that I've been in the field, both in college and in my professional role as a substance abuse counselor, that when social service agencies lose funding, either the state cuts them or the federal government, then the crime rate and the drug use rate seems to go up. And then these kids have nowhere to turn. People that were there trying to mentor them, take, for example, in Chicago, the Hull House.
Uh-huh.
Had been around for 150-some-odd years or more, and now it's closed.
Yeah, it folded about 5 years ago, I guess.
And now these kids that were turning, you know, probably going there for services for, like, tutoring and stuff like that and other programs have nowhere to go.
Mm-hmm.
And the agencies that are there that are struggling to keep up can't keep up with all of the kids that need their services because they don't have the funding. And we've got, and us as a community and as a state and a nation need to step up and help mentor these kids, because if we can find people that can mentor them and help them understand that there are people out there that want to help them and look out for them, then the gangs won't get the claws into them and become the family that they're lacking.
Sure. Well, no one would disagree with that, though some would say that it's not fully demonstrable or hasn't been properly demonstrated that you get clear, strong, isomorphic correlation between the amount spent on social services and payoff results in terms of decrease in crime. It depends upon many intervening conditions, to be sure. But I thank you for registering that point, which is always one worth making. And I think we'll pause right now for a quick round of messages and then directly back to your calls and email. There's one line available, 312-591-7200. And for email, of course, extension 720 at wgnradio.com.
Extension 720 with Milt Rosenberg on 720 WGN.
And we'll go quickly and instantly back to the phones on 312-591-7200. Next up is Eduardo. Good evening, sir.
Yeah, Milt, how you doing?
All right.
I used to be a guardian angel, and I think we need more civilian patrols. And also, I like to see these kids do like 2 years of military service.
Mm-hmm. That'll get them properly focused, you feel.
Yeah, and I noticed a lot of these kids, it's pretty interesting, they're using these electronic devices to communicate with each other.
Yeah.
And I go sometimes to the Harold Washington Library, and I see a lot of them congregate over there.
Yeah, doing what?
Well, pretending to be studying, but actually party planning out their night.
My goodness. You were with the Guardian Angels for some while, were you?
Yeah, for about a year, yeah.
Uh-huh.
In the Rogers Park area, I would be doing patrols.
How well did that work?
It was good. The only thing is there's not enough of us, you know, out there.
Mm-hmm.
So if anybody's interested, they should definitely look into that and help out with the patrols.
There are sometimes judges who give a kid who's in trouble the chance to either volunteer for the military or go to prison or go to reform school. And I guess that's one route into the Army. I thank you, sir, for the call. And we'll go directly and quickly to the next, that being Marilyn. You are on the air. Good evening.
Hi, good evening. I was listening to a lot of the callers. I used to live in the inner city, and we moved to the suburbs. I wasn't going to call, but then the point was made about the police presence.
Yeah.
And the problem is that there is police presence on Michigan Avenue, and there is no police presence in the inner city. It takes a long time for cops to even come to follow up on a call.
Uh-huh.
And even your producer said that there are cops that don't even want to go into the inner city because mm-hmm. of the danger, yet that's their job. We were driving down the street. This was a couple months ago, earlier, so not as hot. but there were literally 27 or more cop cars that just came out of nowhere, again, in the inner city. And trying to figure out what was going on, I couldn't turn anywhere. They literally had streets blocked off, and we couldn't go anywhere. The problem was that a cop had gotten shot. Well, if they had had that type of police presence every time there was a shooting or every time there was a call, then, you know, a lot of this can be curtailed. Yeah, they put the presence down on Michigan Avenue because they don't want people to, they don't want the crime to extend into the, into the that part of the city. But if you can't get the cops to respond where the crime is, then how is the crime supposed to dissipate? And, you know, I do agree with the other caller. You know, if we had people who would, because as an African American, I don't tend to speak for the whole race, but this isn't a problem, and you well know this, that has just started. This is something that is kind of inbred. The problem, though, is that because it's inbred, there are a lot of young children that don't have any other way out because their parents and their parents' parents have come up in this type of culture.
What do you think of attempts within the culture, within those neighborhoods, to mediate, to reduce, to mitigate, to reduce, and to turn this problem around, whether it comes from educators or from clergy or simply from concerned citizens? Do you see any significant activity in, let us say, Black Chicago that is addressing the problem of these rampaging, psychologically disorganized, self-destructive, and others-destructive young males?
You know what, I do, and it's not just young males, it's young females too.
Yeah.
But I do. I know tons of people in my own life and the lives of other people and who are involved, very heavily involved in the lives of other kids, either in church organizations or in schools, and, you know, a lot of the teachers who are really there doing above and beyond what they should be doing as a teacher, and almost becoming surrogate parents.
And do you see, in consequence of all of that, kids getting turned around?
You know, it really depends. That's sort of what I'm getting at in the whole thing of it being inherent or being ingrained or socially ingrained, because where we might see these children on, you know, a daily basis, 2 or 3 hours a day, they go back to the same household,
yeah,
and still are being brought up in the same household. But it is,
they go back to the same street corner as well.
Exactly. And that presence is there, you know, 12 out of the 24 hours,
sure,
where, you know, we don't have them, you know, in that large group of time, which is, you know, unfortunate. You know, we really, and we have mentoring organizations and mentoring groups, not just in churches, but, you know, just on one-on-one, to get even just with the young girls, because if you start there and you teach her self-worth and you teach her who she is in terms of being a young lady, she's not so likely to end up with one of these guys and become, you know, a baby-making machine.
Have you yourself had involvement in this sort of remedial activity?
Totally, totally.
What have you
totally.
Done?
Again, in the mentoring on the female side, just trying to figure, you know, get them to understand that they can do more, that, you know, that this isn't all that they have, that this isn't all that they have to look forward to.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see that there are kids that yearn for that, that want that, and that is, you know, that they are really looking for ways out. This isn't every child.
Sure.
And that's the negative part. I know that there are, you know, 47 murders here and 47 murders there. That seems like a heck of a lot. And it really is. Even one is a lot. But then that we don't then see the flop side of that, where, you know, there are children who are, you know, scoring really high on the ACTs and, you know, graduating from high school. I just went to a graduation tonight where 80% African American, and all of them are going to college. That's not on the news. But, you know, not to say that this isn't a...
Is that a private or a charter school?
No, it was Kenwood Academy.
Oh, wonderful.
And so every child on that stage is entering into college.
Uh-huh.
And that is a statistic that we don't see. You know, not to say that this is, not to make it lopsided. You know, yes, one death is way too many, but, you know, I hear what you say about, you know, the social services, but then when you take those the little bit that the children do have, and you take that government money out, just, you know, the lives that could turn around, that's no longer there, and that's really sad. I think that as a city, you know, I think that, you know, all of us could adopt a child, whether it, you know, and stop looking at it as if it were, you know, it's over there, sort of a racial thing where, you know, it's, you know, those are those people over there. But, you know, if you see someone on the street, don't be afraid to, you know, speak and say hello. You know, small things like that can, you know, they touch people.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't think that it's a, It's not an inner city issue. It's a Chicago issue, and it's all of our issues. But if we can't get the cops to come into the inner city, then how is the crime supposed to stop?
Well, you've said wonderful things, and I think one possible solution would be to duplicate you about 10,000 times and get those 10,000 youths out there in the city. It would make a tremendous difference. Decent, concerned adults who can do the mentoring and can indeed educate beyond the usual curriculum of mere education, but educate kids about what the world is like.
Exactly.
And what opportunities are available to them.
Exactly.
And how what they're doing now is self-defeating and even intrinsically or potentially suicidal.
Exactly.
Yeah. Thank you so much for the conversation. Thank you for the call. It was very valuable. And we'll go to another. We've had some excellent calls tonight, and I really am very, very pleased. It tells me something about our audience, which gives me some real pride. 312-591-7200. Next caller is Fleur. Good evening. You're on the air.
Good evening. I'm a longtime fan of yours, and I think you're the best thing on WGN.
Well, thank you, ma'am.
I would like to say that I went to New York some years ago, and the gentleman, previous caller, mentioned the... these problems don't occur in New York. And at the time I went there was when Giuliani was the mayor. And he did a great deal to make the streets safe for people to walk in New York. And I know that one of the components of his program was to break up the gangs on the street corners. They would not allow congregations around the street corners.
Mm-hmm.
and find the places where they're gathering and meeting and planning and break that up. He did it with I think, also the great presence of the police. And I've been wondering if anybody had ever remembered that, because when I was there, I know we felt safe walking the streets every evening. We'd go someplace for dinner or whatever, and we would walk, and it was delightful.
You know, I'll give you a little bit of autobiography. I was raised in Brooklyn many, many years ago, to be sure. But still, there was trouble on the streets, and I at the same time became a proud member of PAL, P-A-L, which stood for the Police Athletic League.
Uh-huh.
The cops organized sports activity in some of the more difficult neighborhoods.
Yes.
And would spend extra time with kids coaching whether baseball or basketball. Those were the two main sports commitments. And organizing leagues, inter-team play and competition. And it worked. It really made a difference in the lives of many kids. I don't know that it transformed my life, but I was involved and I enjoyed it a great deal. And there were some tougher kids, tougher than me, who were also involved. And I'm not talking about black kids now. These were Jewish and Italian kids in the main.
Yeah.
But some of them came from rather difficult homes and had been traumatized to some degree. And I think this activity must have made a difference in their lives.
Oh, I should think so. I think that would be another activity for them to get their minds off of some of the other terrible things they do.
Well, thank you, ma'am, for the call.
You're most welcome. Thank
Glad
you.
Glad to have heard from you. We've now got a few lines available at last. If you've been trying to reach us for a number of hours, for the last hour and a half, do try again. 312-591-7200 for any comment or question you want to raise concerning the epidemic of youth violence, which has acted up this very weekend and the previous weekend and the weekend before that. Weekend by weekend, the question is, will the kill rate of last weekend be exceeded this weekend? 312-591-7200, two lines available at this moment. And we'll be directly back after the update on the evening's news from Paula Cooper.
Extension 720 with Milt Rosenberg on 720 WGN.
And quickly back to the phones. Next up, Mark has joined us. Good evening, sir. You're on the air.
Hi, Milt. I just want to say I'm a police officer out in the suburbs, mm-hmm. and I have noticed, and I would say particularly within the last year, there's been a breakdown in respect for authority by the teens and even the preteens.
Particularly in this last year?
Yes, and I'm not sure why it's happening, but I have encountered teens and preteens. We get called for mischievous conduct, I guess for lack of a better word, some juvenile delinquency, and you confront the offenders, and the first thing they do is whip out their smartphones, and they start videotaping you.
Uh-huh.
And they start to challenge your authority immediately. And it's been increasing, I would say, within the last year I've noticed it.
Where is this exactly?
Out in the southern suburbs.
In the southern suburbs.
But I've talked to officers from all around, and they, you know, some say they have noticed it too.
So what's the explanation? Just the availability of smartphones?
The technology, and there's recently been a ruling by the ACLU that says it is legal to film police officers.
Ah, I see.
You know, in their line of duty.
Yeah.
And it just surprises me that, I mean, we're talking about, you know, 12 to 17-year-olds, and they just, it seems like it's getting worse, and their lack of authority is worse, and the first thing they want to do is challenge you, and they start, you know, taping
yes,
you with their phone.
Yes, that sounds sort of true to present life. I agree. And the good old ACLU is always in there. Somehow, in pursuit of what they take to be constitutional guarantees for freedom, making life more difficult for everybody,
yes.
including the kids
yes.
who are being ill-served by that.
I agree.
Thank you, sir, for the call.
You're welcome. Bye.
And quickly to another on 312-591-7200. Next up, Eric joins us. You're on the air, sir.
Thank you for taking my call,
man. Yeah.
Okay. In response to the gentleman who was the guardian angel and said to give military service to some
mm-hmm.
of these minor offenders, there are minor offenders who are in gangs, and when they get to the military, they don't drop their gang status. And then when they get out of the military back to the States, they rejoin the gang with this advanced training. I saw this special on TV, a very reputable network. So I'm just wondering if that is a solution or not anymore, since it seems to be these gangs seem to send some members to the military just to learn these tactics.
Is that what that documentary said?
Yes.
Uh-huh. I don't know. I didn't see that. I don't know that. But that doesn't necessarily surprise me. Yeah.
And no, and I was just, you know, concerned, because there are still people who feel that way, but it's now come into the media that sometimes that's not a very good idea.
Yeah. An interesting point, and I thank you for making it, and we'll go quickly to the next caller. We want to be a little bit quicker with the calls now with only about 20 minutes or 22 minutes left. So we now turn to George. Good evening. You're on the air.
Good evening. Before I get to my main point, and with great trepidation, I must disagree with you and the police officer who just spoke. The ACLU does not render any decisions or rulings. The rulings are coming from the court.
Well, of course they do. Yes.
All the ACLU can do is file an action. If
yeah.
the courts rule that an action is constitutional or unconstitutional, then your collective complaint is with the judges and not with the ACLU.
Certainly that's true, and I wasn't suggesting otherwise, but thank you for that point.
The point I'd like to make is this. A number of callers have mentioned that when they've been in New York City in the recent past that they've felt safer, and not being a police officer or an authority on such matters, I can only go by my general reading and my own personal experience, but I've read that New York City has a force of about 43,000 officers for a city of about 8 million. If we had the same ratio of officers to population here, we'd probably have something over 14,000 officers. Currently, I believe the very understrength Chicago police force is at about 11,500 officers, give or take, and they have an authorized strength of something over 13,000. It seems to me that the previous administration and the city council and the current mayor are all more than a little bit irresponsible in this matter. They should be recruiting and training the best young men and women they can find to be career police officers in the city. And they should be in two-man cars and two-man foot patrols in the areas where this trouble is happening. If you don't have visible police officers, people are going to go into the void and do things that they shouldn't do. And I really think that Chicago city government has been lax in this matter. One other quick point, if I may.
Mm-hmm.
Your former colleague as a Tribune employee, the late and much missed Mike Royko, always used to say you can steal a lot more with a pen than you can with a gun.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's a lot of cynicism out there in the populace, particularly among those who are more poor and deprived, when they see the substantial amount of white-collar crime that's gone on in this country over the past 10, 20, 30 years with little or no punishment.
Yeah.
I mean, people who lost 85 or 90% of their pensions when Enron flim-flammed them, and virtually nobody was sent to prison. Going back to when Ronald Reagan was president, whom we would all agree was a conservative Republican, when the leaders of the savings and loan industry were acting in a nefarious fashion, he put the Justice Department to work on it, and 1,200 or so of them went to jail. Nothing similar to that has happened with the stock market fraud and manipulations, the banking frauds, the mortgage industry, all that's happened over the past 10, 15, 20 years. And we actually bail these people out with our hard-earned tax money, and they use it to give themselves bonuses.
Yeah, and they also make some very strong contributions to political candidates.
Of course they do. And one more last point is that...
That's your third last point.
It will be the last one. We've lost an enormous amount of entry-level factory and industrial jobs in this country over the past 10 years. According to the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics, something like 50,000 factories have closed, and corporate leadership has moved 6 million jobs out of the country. People who are desperate and live in neighborhoods where there used to be factories and there used to be jobs just develop a I don't give a darn attitude about anything and just go out and act up. I mean, we need to redevelop the kind of jobs that people can do.
Well, that's a strong agenda of social improvement, which would undoubtedly also tend to diminish the range and the intensity of crime. And I thank you for the call. And with that, we've got a lot of good contributions tonight, I would say. And with that, we go to the next caller, who is Greg. You're on the air, sir. Good evening.
Hey, good evening. I didn't catch all of it, and I haven't really followed this very thoroughly, but my understanding is that they're going to go after the minors who commit these crimes, whether it be in a group or a gang format or mob action, whatever. But the realities are in the street, in the gang world that we live in, they recruit these younger members, and they use them for the shootings and stuff. So the reality of what they're saying with their law is that we're going to go after them and have them roll over or testify against them. It's not going to happen. The 13-year-old knows up front he's only going to juvie until he's 18. So until you start prosecuting 14-year-olds and giving them 25 to life, which is not going to happen with the ACLU and everyone else, I mean, this is grandstanding law. I mean, just as my twisted theory of living in Chicago, because we have all these signs for everything, why don't we start putting signs up, don't shoot anybody today, as a gentle reminder? It couldn't hurt.
Uh-huh.
And it's just ridiculous that they think that you're going to, a 13-year-old is not going to rat out a gang leader because it's his badge, it's his passage. I mean, are they that naive? They think one more law is going to make a difference? I'm shocked at the naive part of our politicians and elected officials that are not out there. They don't know what they're talking about.
Well, they're saying that it was the mayor who said earlier today, I gather, that we're going to go after the gang leaders. If they said send kids out on the street and they themselves don't go out on the street, but those kids do violent crime, we will go after the gang leaders and arrest and punish them.
And how would you, how? With what?
Well, ACLU will be right there alongside them.
I agree with you. They're going
to
have better lawyers than the city,
or at
least more of them. And it's just ridiculous that they do this grand thing for this. And it's just sad because it's been entrenched in Chicago. It's getting worse. The media does not report these, the crime statistics as they go through them. And it's obscene. And it's all in one area. And it's sad that it's affecting one ethnicity out of all. And it's ignored in that sense because, well, it's not us. We've come to the point in the city where it says, trust no one and then trust no one else. And that's just sad. And,
well, you represent the voice of cynicism, but it's an empirically based...
Well, no, it's not cynicism, it's reality.
I was about to say, it is an empirically based cynicism. That is to say, it's realistic. And I thank you for the call. And we're about to pause for a last round of commercial messages.
Extension 720 with Milt Rosenberg on 720 WGN.
And we'll dash right back to the phones. Here is the next caller. Mary has joined us at WGN Radio. Good evening.
Hi, Mel. I just have one piece of advice for the Chicago Police Force. I like to ride along the lakefront, and there's a police presence there, especially in the evenings, and I'm grateful for that. But Saturday night, I was riding up north, just north of Oak Street Beach, in between that and North Street. North Avenue Beach. And
you were bicycling, were you?
Yes, and there was a tremendous crowd of African-American youth there, completely blocking the bike paths, and so many that you just felt uneasy.
Where was this, did you say?
Just north of Oak Street Beach.
Uh-huh.
And people felt uneasy, and bikers couldn't get through, and no one was doing anything wrong, but you just felt like anything could happen. And then as I got, off my bike to get through it and ask people to move and no one paid any attention or budged, eventually I got through and I saw there was a congregation of 12 to 15 police really just sitting back and chatting on the beach. And I love the Chicago Police Force, but it would be nice for them to take this patrol more seriously because they really could have possibly kept something from happening if it had happened.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure what might have happened later. But I do notice that there might be 5 to 10 policemen congregating when it would be really nice if they could break into groups of 2 or 3.
Well, if you had a group of kids, blocking the pathway so that the bikers couldn't get through, that in itself, it seems to me, is something that the police ought to correct and move some of the kids aside.
And as I got further north around Fullerton, or closer to Fullerton, I noticed that cars were starting to come down, police cars. So I think they were going to break it up. But there were plenty of policemen just right there, not really doing anything. Yeah. And I do love the police force, but that would just be a piece of advice for some supervisor to be supervising them to make sure they are actually walking the beat.
To be sure. Thank you for the call.
Sure.
And now we've got a few lines available again. There's still 10 minutes left, so if you want to get in there quickly, we will be able to probably handle your call at 312-591-7200. And Al is next. Good evening, sir. You're on the air.
Hi. I was going to say basically the same thing as your previous caller, but if they could enforce an ordinance, on the bike path, to clear both sides going to and from, left and right on the bike path, that's an ordinance that I think could catch the troublemakers before they decide to mug, at 10 p.m., because those are exactly the same people doing it.
Are we getting much in the way of mugging on the bike paths these days?
No, it's just like intimidation. They'll just block the whole bike path.
Yeah.
So you have to get off your bike and you have to walk it, because it's like they have a chip on their shoulder and they're ready to start trouble. And by the time 10 o'clock rolls around, I guess they decide they're going to mug somebody. So
where are these kids from, would you say?
I would say the inner city, probably the west side or the south side.
So
if they keep an eye on them there, then they could stop the trouble before it gets to be a mugging. because they're exactly the same kids, in my opinion. But anyway, that's really, I think, where they should focus before it gets out of hand.
Do you think that there's been more of this, zeroing in on this particular behavior, blocking the bike paths, gangs of kids coming in from the inner city? Do you think there's been more of this recently than there has been in the past?
Well, I think like this summer and last summer. I'm not sure why it never happened before, but all of a sudden, it's like these last two summers, it's like a whole other story. So,
that is my impression, too. Not merely with regard to the blocking of bike paths, but showing up on the main commercial thoroughfares in large number, looking rather hostile and rampaging into stores on occasion and so on. That is rather a new phenomenon. What explains it?
I think when they just get together in a group and they feel more brave and they have a chip on their shoulder, maybe it's the way they've been raised in a violent...
Yeah, but that's been the case for some time.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. That isn't an effect that has just manifested itself in the last 2 years.
Yeah, I don't know. But what brought them to that area and start trouble? Mm-hmm. Maybe it's some kind of form of protest. Maybe they don't even know they're doing it, but, you know, something's got to change, like, from the way they're raised, in my opinion, but that's a big, big problem. It's way beyond my,
Me too. Me too.
Well,
thank you, sir, for the call.
Bye-bye.
And we'll go next to Wilson. You're on the air, sir.
Yes, I'm African-American, and most of the comments tonight, I'd say about 95%, I agree, and I am disappointed in that other African-Americans have not called in today, but we're scared just as everybody else is.
Of course, yeah.
And I'm out in the hundreds, and we're scared to death too. But yesterday at 79th and the red line, the conductor had to get off the train, walk back two cars, and tell the same 12 to 15 kids, "Hey, stop locking the door. This train needs to move." And he was serious, and they were still trying to block the door. And I also want to say this. At 95th and the Red Line, the only time I've seen in the last 2-3 months, you'll see the undercover police write tickets for people smoking cigarettes. But they don't stop anybody else, and we're scared to walk through that Red Line station. And that's it.
You're scared to walk into that station, you say?
In or out, because you have all the people there. You have more people selling loose cigarettes than I've seen, and the police don't do anything. And you have 5-6 police officers congregating in there, in their little office booth. But they're not out at where the buses pick people up, getting on the buses.
People selling loose cigarettes, you say. Why is that a major item of trade?
Because of the cost of the pack of cigarettes.
I see. Uh-huh.
I mean, it's a huge trade, but you don't... But you see the undercover police write tickets. I've seen about 3-4 tickets written. But they don't... But the young people are standing there and the older people are standing there just selling cigarettes. But you write a ticket for somebody that's standing there while they're waiting for a bus to have a smoke. But they don't stop the people that are standing there all day selling loose cigarettes.
Is that the worst that happens around there? The selling of cigarettes?
I'm sure it's a lot more.
I would think so.
I'm sure it's a lot more. Yeah. But we're scared too. It's not just, it doesn't matter the skin color. We're scared too.
Yeah.
So I agree with, I've heard the whole show, and I am so glad that you didn't make the connection with the other, what was planned tonight, because this has been a very interesting.
It has been for me as well. I thank you for the call.
Thank you.
Glad to have heard from you. And we'll go quickly now to another. Jerry has joined us. Good evening.
Good evening. Once upon a time, we could rely upon one of the major political parties in this country to favor a strong protective tariff on the theory that Americans shouldn't have to see if they can live as cheap as any Chinaman in order to have employment. And that party has moved away from that, and there is nobody now to speak up for the working person who isn't able or who is too young, et cetera, to have the kind of skills and experience that you can compete against. In other words, you can pay the cost of having a business operate in America at its five basic costs of operation.
Now you're relating that, sir, to the matter we've been discussing all night.
Well, because this has an awful lot to unemployment and lack of opportunity has an awful lot to do with the general demoralization.
Yeah.
To say that, well, they need to simply refrain and politely go someplace and quietly start, that would be nicer. And if it was me, probably I would. I believe in different kind of religious things and all that stuff. But most people, you can't realistically expect that. That the fact is that that there is no, for an awful lot of those people, there is no way to make a living. And that is a very, very important part of the strong appeal of gangs and whatnot to the young people. There is nothing else offered to them. And I think that the Republican Party and the Whig Party before it was the champion of the ordinary urban working people that can't compete against the Chinaman and the kid. It's more important now because years ago, at least, you had an ocean to protect you from Chinese competition. It was a little more expensive to import things. Now there's no protection at all. They can make it in Bangladesh, certainly cheaper than you can.
Well, it is certainly the case that the inner city, to use the jargon that we often do, or the ghetto, or what you will, essentially the people who are in what Robert Kennedy used to call the underclass, though that is no longer a fashionable term, are all the more displaced and all the more abandoned in the kind of economic system that has evolved over recent years.
One might say, oh, well, then let them go someplace else where they can live. That we simply cannot have. We're not going to stand. I'm not going to stand for that. The general public would not, I hope, allow that. That we need, therefore, necessarily to offer some kind of a strong protective tariff, at least as to some kinds of commodities that young people in these from such backgrounds who really aren't very, their services are not very valuable. And therefore, they can't be required, you might say, to compete economically.
Well, in the war, the integrated world economy no longer allows high tariffs as a basic social measure to somehow stimulate or restore an economy. It doesn't work that way anymore.
It can, perhaps, sir. I think maybe it could, a little thought, but I don't know just how.
Yeah. Well, that's quite interesting. I wish I had more time to develop that. I do thank you for the call.
Thank you.
I think that will do it with the calls, and I'm very grateful to our listeners tonight and to our callers for some excellent contributions, though we have not solved the problem. It will be of great interest to watch rather closely what our new heavily rewarded, heavily praised police chief actually manages to do by way of bringing this weekend horror under effective control. Even if they bring that under control, the longer and more persisting problems that we've been discussing tonight will still be there. I need to say a few things about other program matters. To begin with, about the program tomorrow night. We'll be on the air only for the 1 hour tomorrow night, coming on at 11 after the ball game. My guest, Jeffrey Lewis, is the author of a new book of considerable interest. It is titled The Business of Martyrdom, A History of Suicide Bombing. Just what the suicide bombers are up to, what motivates them, how they can manage, and it isn't just the promise of the 72 virgins, I'm sure, how they can manage to throw their lives away while trying to kill as many as possible, remains a very challenging and mysterious issue. That's what's coming tomorrow night. For tonight, it is time to close down with thanks to all for listening. And a quick reminder that you can get to all of our podcasts if you simply go to wgnradio.com/extension720. This program will be up by late tomorrow afternoon, and we'll be with you again tomorrow night at 11. Until then, a most cordial good night to all.